Thanks for joining us on the JX today. We start with education and one elementary school principal's experiences. Kathleen Corley writes of using all the tools to help kids to learn in her book, The Magical Place We Call School, creating a safe space for learning and happiness in a challenging world. Kathleen Corley is a longtime educator with her professional roots in music. She earned 2 music education degrees and a PhD in educational administration in Illinois. Kathleen has been involved in opening 3 schools, including her current school, Red Cedar Elementary in Bluffton, South Carolina, where she has been the only principal. Kathleen Corley, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So what is Red Cedar School? Is it a charter or something like it?
Nope, just a plain old elementary school in the Beaufort County School District. We have a number of elementary schools. We have a smaller number of middle schools and about the same number of high schools.
You begin the story in The Magical Place We Call School with the making of Red Cedar Stew, which is both event and metaphor. Can you sketch those out?
Yes. Red Cedar Stew is sort of like Brunswick Stew, if you know anything about that. It has a tomato base to it. It has lots of wonderful vegetables in it. And yes, the children do eat it. Their parents are amazed every year that the children do eat it. We have a large Hispanic population here, mostly from Central America and rural Mexico. And they bring with them tastes for other kinds of vegetables. There are root vegetables called malanga and yuca, and they add so much to the mix. And you can see where I'm going with that,
mm-hmm.
because there's the stew itself, and then there's our population. And we learn so much from each other as we're learning the curriculum.
Which is a major point of the book. I get the sense from the get-go that good teachers are also good learners from their students.
Absolutely. If you're listening, they'll tell you just about everything you need to know except the content itself. They let you know how much you can push them to excel. They let you know when they have a problem with something. People look at negative behavior, bad behavior, as, well, just bad behavior. Frustrating, annoying, we have to do something about this. But babies cry because they can't tell you they need to be changed. They let you know in another way. It's a behavior until they have the words. And sometimes still it's a behavior. So with children, sometimes we get the same behavior over and over. We have to figure out why that keeps happening. And once we do, we can deal with root cause. Sometimes it's a very simple thing. Sometimes it's extremely complex and will require a social worker or a counselor or somebody who can wrap their head around the child's head and find ways to help them, of course, with parent participation and contribution. But if we don't understand who our students are, we can't meet them where they are and bring them to where they could be.
So talk about assessing their needs and addressing those and the phrase Maslow before Bloom and what that means.
Maslow before Bloom means that before we teach children and ask them complex questions at higher levels, like asking them to analyze or synthesize or evaluate the material that we're teaching them, as Bloom says, we have to meet their basic needs, like air, water, clean water would be good, food, clothing, the safety needs. Then we get to love and belonging and self-esteem and then self-actualization. But if a child is sleeping on an air mattress in a cold apartment and didn't get to eat last night, his mind is not on the Pythagorean theorem. It's just not. We have to meet his needs first. And if you're thinking, well, there are other people to do that, well, maybe, but we're kind of first responders when it comes to that. We can see a family in need, whether they talk to us about it or not, and then offer to help.
So it goes beyond schoolroom, educational supports. I mean, you really have to get to their basic needs. You get into situations, though, I'm sure, where a kid tells you their problems. You present these to the parents. The parents can't do anything.
Yes, But we can hook them up. Our social worker has lists and lists of community agencies and other places that can assist. But what she can't do, what she's not supposed to do, and what she won't do is make everything happen for the family, because we're teaching them too. If they need those supports, she leads them to this is who you call, this is where you go. If you need a ride, let us know. We can help you with that. But she won't give them a list of, okay, this woman is coming to your house because I arranged it, and this person is going to do that because I arranged it. No, those services are meant for people to self-help. So she hooks them up, and then they do what they need to do. And if it looks like they're not, we may have to have another conversation, especially if it has to do with their child's welfare.
Kathleen Corley is our guest on The Exchange, a longtime educator and the author of the book called The Magical Place We Call School. You spend a chapter of the book on teachers applying leverage with students in school. What kind of leverage?
Anything you can imagine that is safe and legal and moral. you don't violate any laws. Whatever edge you have in keeping children's attention, in helping them get the curriculum, understand what you're teaching, you need to use it. So if you're thinking about I'm going to pick on high school teachers, you think about the high school teacher sitting back in his chair in a monotone. I guess we're getting to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. With the, Bueller. Yes, right. Something like that, an uninviting, and now I'm going to tell you something spectacular that you will want to use for the rest of your life. I don't think I've got them. I don't think they're going to listen to me if that's the way I present it. So energy, commitment. You wake up in the middle of the night and you write something down. Oh, this is going to be a great idea. When I have that lesson tomorrow that I'm presenting, this is the perfect thing to go with it. I'm going to tell the rest of my team. That's what a lot of the teachers here are like. Those teachers exist all over the country, but here's the crux kind of my book. Does everybody know that? Does anybody know that unless you're intimate with the school? And if you don't know it, why don't you know it? And if you don't know it and you haven't made a point to learn about it, are you one of the people who's throwing rocks at us for not doing what you think we should be doing when you don't even know what we're doing? Seems to make sense. Yes.
So you really want to get people involved with the schools. And you talk about the ways, in fact, you give us a speech that you give at every assembly about thanking the parents for being there, urging them to still be there when their kids are in high school. So this is a big thing. I mean, teachers get connected to students, but you also want the families and the parents to stay connected to the school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. We do our best when we're all working together. Sometimes a parent will tell us one little thing that will help us understand how we can best teach the students. When I was a student teacher in Homewood, Illinois, outside of Chicago, south suburbs, and I taught at a school that had just finished having some racial tensions and some pretty bad fights. So there was a black-white thing going on. And I'm 20 years old, and I'm student teaching, and I'm teaching the chorus. There are various choruses all day. I think there were four choruses that teacher taught, and so then I did. There was a mixed chorus. And the tenors seemed to be this was an easy hour credit, and they were not really engaged in this. And the teacher had left the room, and I was teaching, and three of the boys in that tenor group were African American, and I said, somewhere along the line, because they're all slouched down, I said, okay, remember, like it's a concert performance. Let's all sit up in our chairs. Tenors especially. Come on, guys. You need to sit up in your chair. One of the guys said, did you call me boy? I think you called me boy. And I looked at him like, really? Oh, I'm being baited. And we got out of it. It wasn't a problem, really. I didn't go down a rabbit hole with him. But they had a field house there, and I used to run in the afternoon after school. And I saw him there doing hurdles. And I admire anybody who can do hurdles, especially if the hips just stay there and they scissor their legs and they do it the way the pros do. That is just like, I cannot imagine that kind of control. And I have very short legs anyway, so it's out of the question. But I watched that guy, he's a freshman, I watched him doing hurdles. So next day, he didn't know that I was there. Next day, what am I going to talk to him about? I'm going to find a way to talk about how well he runs hurdles. And as I'm passing out the music and said, those were low hurdles yesterday, right? Are you going to move to high or are you staying on low? He goes, what? What? What did you just ask me? And I asked again. He said, those are low, and I'm going to stay with low for a while. That's what coach wants me to do. Cool. You're awesome. And then I moved on. Not another problem. And if somebody else was going to get out of line, he was going to handle them.
Huh. We're talking to Kathleen Corley about her book, The Magical Place We Call School, based on her long experience as an educator and a principal in startup schools. Talk to the people who don't have a principal like you, don't have a school like you, educators, parents from a struggling school. How keep from getting discouraged, from burning out?
Have you talked to your principal about support? Have you talked to your principal about what he or she feels are the most important things to have happen in the building and how you can support that, and then slide in how that person can support you? Because if the principal is not supporting the teachers, it's really hard to get something done, because the parent comes to complain to the principal about the teacher enforcing rules, doing nothing that she's not supposed to do, doing everything she's supposed to do. And then the principal goes, oh, gee, Mrs. Thomas, I don't want you to be mad or anything. So, yeah, I'll talk to her to tell her to back off. Well, you can't. You just can't. You can't put any daylight between the mission, the teacher and the mission, and the principal and the teacher and the mission. Because we can't do our best if I'm going to cave. And some of it's about really silly, small stuff. Had one of these just recently. No, we come to school on time, so I was kind of wondering why so many tardies. Well, you know, things happen, and it's just the way it is. Well, you see, ma'am, when your child comes late, it's not just on her. It interrupts the entire class when she walks in late. It's not like she's making a circus of it. Now, I bet she doesn't want to be late either, but she still interrupts the flow. So can we make that not happen going forward? Because this is our school, too, and you're impeding our progress. I want to say you're a construction cone, but I would get a call from the superintendent on that, probably.
All right, so we have about 2 minutes left, and I just want to ask a general question. The challenges of our time, and it's a big one, school shootings, kids with screens in their faces all the time, bullying, pandemic, learning loss. Is education, and for that matter, society more broadly, up to the challenges we face in education now?
Wow. In less than 2 minutes. Okay. If you stick with the mission, if you're very clear-eyed about what you're trying to do, and you make sure that your parents understand that you're going to push forward, their children are going to be challenged, because that's the way it needs to be. We cannot hold students back and have excuses for not being our best. And at times, mom and dad, we're going to ask you to do things like cell phones. How much are they limited, or do they have parental controls on them? If they start texting each other at night and they're doing nasty things with their classmates, can we curb that? Can we work together to make that not happen? And we give them suggestions, and we have meetings, and we talk. But pretty much, our parents like what we do. We have a couple of excellent ratings on our school report card over the last couple of years, which is no mean feat after COVID. And they trust us, by and large. They respect us even more so. And if they don't, then we have to have a word of prayer with them about that. Like, why? Let's fix this. If you don't trust us, there must be a really good reason. So let's figure that out and solve it.
There's a real sense of honesty and directness that just pervades the book about just, you know, saying what you mean and meaning what you say and doing it.
Exactly.
And exactly. The Magical Place We Call School is the book. Kathleen Corley, the principal at Red Cedar Elementary in Bluffton, South Carolina, the author and our guest. Kathleen, thanks for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Sure. It was great. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Break time on the Exchange. We're back with Peter Breslow in just a bit.